This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
The big one.
It is a big one. We've got
Chelsea
a great...
in crisis edition.
Everton in a bit more crisis edition than Roger. Rainy weather in New York. We've been having so much rain. I love the rain.
Against your window.
I've never enjoyed the rain more than this winter, Rog. But you're back from England, talking of rain.
The land of rain, where rain was invented.
Yeah, exactly. The sky's closer to the ground. But you were down south.
I was down south. I was in Southampton.
Yeah.
A city I'd never been to before in my life.
Yeah.
I arrived. Just after podding last week, I flew right to England.
Yeah.
And I arrived there in Southampton at the Southampton Hilton.
Wow.
Which is Hilton as in a college dorm, in two single beds.
Yeah.
It was their top room.
Uh-huh.
And I went into a bar, as you do when you arrive in a country.
Yeah.
I think it was there about 1 o'clock in the morning when I walked in.
Uh-huh.
And it was packed.
You asked for their finest bottle of Malbec.
I did.
Yeah.
I got a bottle of Malbec.
You did?
I had to work. I had a couple hours work to do to prepare for my interviews.
Yeah.
You weren't there to keep me company.
I wish I should have been there.
And I just listened to begin with for the conversations that were all around me.
Yeah. For instance?
There was two large men and a woman.
Okay.
And they had a conversation that was literally the one guy explained to the others, goes, in all honesty, mate, I like to go out with fat birds.
Oh.
And my ears did prick up.
This was not Barry Hearn.
No, but he said it sounds my Barry Hearn voice. I couldn't believe it. I wrote it down and I emailed it to you, I think.
Yeah.
About my return. It was like I got the bends like a diver,
uh-huh.
not going into a compression chamber, getting the bends, being exposed back to England.
Yeah.
This guy just, very loud voice, he goes, you date a skinny girl.
Yeah.
And you get a cup of coffee first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
If you date a fatty.
Yeah.
A large woman.
Yeah.
There's always a good meal on the table, was what he said. I was sick in my mouth.
Sick in your mouth.
I was sick in my mouth.
I think there's some flawed logic. That does explain a lot about England.
I find it very bleak, David. I find it terribly bleak.
You've said to me before, thimblefuls of daylight in the winter in England. Thimblefuls.
Well, I drove through the heart of the country
to
interview Les Reed, the Southampton youth development guru, who happened to be that day in St. George's Park, the FA Football Association's headquarters in the middle of the country.
Yeah, it's going to fix everything. It's going to fix everything, Rog.
So I had to travel to visit him because he wasn't in Southampton. So I drove 3.5 hours through the heart of the country.
Did you drive or were driven?
I was driven.
Oh, good. Because he's a horrible driver.
And it got light at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
It was dark again at 8:20.
That's pretty much the length of the days. We are getting towards the shortest day of the year, though, Rod.
I was looking out of the window, and all I could hear was that hymn
we
used to sing at school.
In the bleak midwinter,
frosty wind made moan.
Earth stood hard as iron, water like a stone.
That's all I could think of over and over and over again,
snow
David.
Snow on snow, my favourite line. Snow on snow, in case you didn't get it before.
I realised why England are not very good at football anymore.
Yeah, which is?
When it gets dark that early,
we're
breeding a nation of mole men. We are breeding a nation of mole men, David.
Yeah.
All I can say is I was working a lot with soccer people, and they say that a lot of people who come from America to England spend hours under artificial bulbs that artificially recreate the effects of sunlight. I can't think of anything more depressing than living in a house where you have to fabricate sunlight.
Yeah.
So I came back a little low, David,
about
the country of our birth.
Uh-huh.
And just when I thought I couldn't go any lower, how low can you go?
Uh-huh.
Prince William and his wife followed me back over here.
The Duchess of Cambridge, Her Royal Highness the Duchess of Cambridge, Rod.
I can't stand watching
them. Oh, come on. I am so excited. Their Royal Highnesses, Prince William, Kate, they're here in New York City, Rod.
Yeah, I normally try and side with the bald man.
Yeah.
As a proud bald man, I try and feel an affinity, and the Prince has blatant problems in sectors 3.84.
I can't even apply this to him because of the divine right of future kings, Rog. He is chosen by God to be the future king, the heir to the throne, second in line to the throne behind his father Charles. So the divine right to insult Prince William is to insult God.
Well, pull out a sword.
Yeah.
Pull out a sword and we will duel about this issue, yeah. David, quite happily.
Yeah, I'll get my knighthood yet, Rog.
I was watching them last night at the Nets game when they shook hands with Jay-Z.
Yeah.
And Beyonce. David Itzikoff, the New York Times, tweeted a beautiful photo of them together. Underneath, he said, he tweeted in Prince William's voice, one is so sorry to hear about your 99 problems. But I was watching them, and he was also, I was watching them, and I thought, we used to have a history, David.
Yeah.
We used to have tradition.
Mm-hmm.
We used to mean something.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have some relevance.
Yeah.
And now, our royals, watching them in New York, they're just marketing activations.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they are. They're no different, really, than Flo from Progressive or Rob Lowe and DirecTV. They're England's advertising face. It would be cheaper.
Flo's new Progressive ad is excellent, by the way. Anyway.
I mean, they are. They're England's advertising face, and it's a crap, talentless, privileged, uninspiring face.
What they do for the country and for the Commonwealth, the entire Commonwealth. This is a young man who served his country. He served NATO, Rog, in our armed forces. He's a rescue helicopter pilot. And him and his little brother, I won't hear anything bad against them. Fantastic.
Did you see what
fantastic
he was wearing?
Fantastic young men.
Did you see what he was wearing at the Nets game? He looked like a suburban dad who shops at Land's End. Tweed up, man. For God's sake, tweed up.
Yeah, he was trying to go a little more casual, Rog.
There's nothing there, David.
It wouldn't matter, even
nothing.
If he'd have won.
It's emptiness. This it's is a shell much, game we're perpetrating.
This is how much you loathe the royal family. This is how much. You ready? Even if he'd have been wearing Harris tweed, Rog, you still would have loathed him being at the Nets game. In fact, you would have found American professional sports sullied by his use of tweed and his wearing of tweed at the game.
Can I give that one some thought?
Yes.
Because to me, the only thing that made me feel sadder than watching them was when I started to think about what it must be like to be them.
Yeah.
Everywhere you go, you have a red carpet, you have a band playing, you have people cheering. It must be soul-destroying, like living somewhere where there's just sun all the time, no seasons.
Yeah.
You have to be like dutiful.
Florida.
You have to feign interest in Dikembe Mutombo, knowing all the time that your half-brother Harry's having all the fun.
Dikembe Mutombo was playing last night in the Nets game.
He sat by them the whole time.
Oh, that's amazing.
I was trying to lip read. I'm not very good at it. Whether he was telling, what's her name?
The Duchess of Cambridge.
Yeah. I think he asked her if she wants to sex.
No, don't. How dare you? You can't. Do you know what? It's so fortunate that I love the royal family, Rog, because if I didn't, our entire podcast every week would just be like rubbishing the royal family.
We do
There's
have
nothing else you'd want to talk about.
I have a side project with Billy Bragg called Today in Hating the Royal Family, but we had the real royal family in this week, didn't we? We had real royalty.
Downton Abbey, Rog, second to the royal family. We had the cast of Downton Abbey here, Rog. It was wonderful.
You still smell of Lord Grantham.
Yeah, Lord Grantham. Lord Grantham, from my hometown, Rog, of Blackheath, was from exactly where I'm from. Like 500 yards. He lived from the age of 5 to 10, literally 500 yards from my parents' house.
You're
it was
perpetrating
a great
the myth that every American has when they meet us. And they say to us, you're from England,
do you know Lord Grantham? Yes, I do. I absolutely know him. I grew up 500 yards
from
him.
We had Thomas in.
Yeah, Thomas, Rob James Collier was in. Had him on the TV show. What a lovely guy.
He is a wonderful bloke.
Very
nice,
stylish. I mean, he's a good-looking man, but he's very, very stylish, Rog. I noticed that he was going for a new look that threatens a little bit our burgeoning tie manufacturing business, which we've gone into with our wonderful Warpig ties that we've made with General Knot.
Now sold out.
Now sold out, I'm afraid. But did you notice he was wearing an air tie? This is the new look. Top button up. Creating the illusion that you're wearing a tie, and it's a fashion move in men's fashion called an air tie.
Yeah, we
and
talked
he was wearing
about it
an air
pod.
Tie. We did.
Yeah,
I didn't remember that.
But what
did I talk about it, or did you talk about it?
We also talked about Chelsea.
Did I talk about the same thing?
Well, we talk about the same thing every week,
yeah,
so this is no
true.
Different.
Yeah, the royal family.
How does it create the illusion that you're wearing a tie when there is no tie there?
The first thing I saw when I saw him is I thought, wow, there is the absence of tie. That's an air tie.
Because I interviewed someone for a job recently.
Yeah,
she came in. And she took off her coat,
mm-hmm.
and she had a shirt on, but she'd forgotten to put a skirt on.
Yeah. Air skirt.
She was just a bit absent-minded, and she was so nervous for the interview, she said she'd forgotten to put a skirt on.
Really?
Who
has forgotten to put a skirt on?
I didn't hire her.
Oh, my goodness. She forgot to put a skirt on. That is just genius.
Totally nervous. Should she have just played it off and said, oh, it's an air skirt?
That's like the plot of every play that played in the West End in the 1970s. But it was like, you know, when did you last see your trousers?
Air skirt. Talking about air skirts.
Yeah.
We moved to Tweed this week.
Well, you moved to Tweed.
Thank you, Freeman Sporting
Club. Yeah, I didn't move to Tweed yet.
At Trade Kurt
sent
us a beautiful article.
Are you concerned that you've moved to Tweed too early?
No.
Okay.
I don't think I've moved. It's not possible to move to Tweed too early.
Okay, checking.
And B, look at it outside.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's like a summer's day in Liverpool.
You're wearing
absolutely
a Tweed now.
Pouring.
How is the Tweed doing?
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's absolutely gorgeous. Okay. I mean, I've got to tell you, we got a tweet from at Trade Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
Sent us an article about designers in Scotland.
Yeah,
at a Scottish university.
Yes,
I think Heriot University.
Oh, in Edinburgh,
have created a
Heriot
tweed
what?
Jacket that naturally smells of whiskey.
Oh, wow!
Harris Tweed and Johnny Walker Black have created a tweed that's imbued with an aroma so deeply infused that even when you dry clean it, it still comes out smelling of your favourite tipple.
I know how to make your tweed jacket naturally smell of whiskey, Roger.
It's so funny, because the guy I told you about in the Southampton restaurant, I forgot to tell you, when I woke up the next morning and drove to Southampton's training ground, he was in the lobby of the Southampton Hilton, asleep, covered in his own vomit.
Yeah.
That's one way, I guess, of naturally imbuing.
Maybe because he told his story about his difference between skinny birds and people
disgusting.
Of a regular,
it's
women of a regular size.
Even
he told that and he ended up being vomited on.
I
want
to say, if I was given the chance to be involved in any threesome in the world, if like an angel came down and said, any threesome you want to be in the world.
Not usually the offers that angels make you in conventional angel narrative. Anyway, go ahead.
The one I'd come up with in my dreams would be Tweed, Johnny Walker, and Old Rog.
Who's Old Rog?
Me.
I thought this was a new character because we've talked about Second Rog,
which is
the Rog that comments on, especially when Rog is complaining, Second Rog who complains that Rog is complaining.
I will often complain if I'm exhausted and we're recording. I'll often say,
oh, stop complaining,
stop,
Rog.
Shut your mouth. Stop moaning. Stop your moaning.
I love that, Roger.
I often try and stop myself.
Yeah.
David likes that Roger more than the normal one.
We sometimes go out and talk about you.
But if it was Tweed, Johnny Walker and Old Rog, I'd just sit at home, watch football in my tweed jacket and just rub myself down and softly moan.
Okay. Any other observations about England, Rog?
We'll weave them into the... I do want to talk about Southampton in a serious way, but everything in its place.
Southampton. We got a packed show, Rog. A weekend of sharks.
Jesus Christ.
In which the once invincible proved mortal. We're going to break down all the action. We're going to talk MLS, Cuppity Cup Cup, and Landon Donovan.
He has risen.
Women's World Cup draw, Rog. That was odd. And welcome to the pod, a man who knows pies and Pellegrini, New York Magazine restaurant critic, and a Man City fan, Rog.
Softest hand in the business.
Adam Platt. We're 15/38 of the way through the season,
Rog. It's almost over.
That does not reduce. We've got a title race again, Rog.
We got ourselves a title race, Dave.
We got ourselves a title race. Great job, Premier League writers. Didn't see that coming. Any big questions from the weekend before we jump in, Rog?
Here's my big question, Dave.
Alert.
How many Premier League fans are happy with their team right now? It's a very odd league table.
Wow. It's like a mood table. You know, I've got a friend who started a weather app. And the weather app is one of the things she did with this weather app is there's a national weather sort of report, not based on what the temperature is, but based on what the mood of the people in various parts of the country is. And if we did a mood table, that would be very interesting right now. Who would be top of the Premier League mood table?
I'd imagine Chelsea are still, and we'll discuss.
Feeling okay.
Feeling bloody good.
Sunny, a few clouds in the sky, but basically feels good.
I do wonder how many other fan bases. We will discuss.
West Ham, Rog. They're in a pretty good mood right now.
Thank you.
I'd say they're doing well on the mood table.
I'd imagine Newcastle fans.
Yeah. Blue skies, Rog.
Absolutely.
Feel a little bit sheepish about their behaviour earlier in the season.
Yep.
But feeling pretty good.
Yeah, feeling unbelievable. Who else, though, David? Who else would say, love how this thing is unfurling?
Well, Man City, you've got to think that Man City are feeling pretty good right now.
Little fear, Kun Aguero, out for question mark weeks.
Question mark weeks.
Yeah, and this team have not really played.
You're going to the African Cup of Nations,
football.
Rog.
Clouds on the horizon.
Yeah.
We'll talk about Manchester United, exactly where their mood is, because it's confusing wheels within wheels.
Yeah.
But I'd say to you, the only other fan base I can think of, and it's down the other end of the table, Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
Plenty to feel great about.
Yeah.
Plenty to feel great
about.
Got
Rebecca Lua.
Yeah.
Celebrity fans.
Their team are playing.
They got the cheerleaders. They've got the eagle, Rog, that takes off before the games.
they got
a lot.
They've got entertaining.
They're near Croydon.
Flamboyant.
Excellent shopping before Christmas.
Flick-worthy football, David.
Yeah. Okay, talking of that, to the football, Rog. Time to crack open. Oh, the Guinness.
I'm just going to pour this down the front of my blazer.
Yeah, so you said to have a blazer tasting of whiskey, much better. Johnny Walker maybe. It'd be much better to have a blazer.
But you don't need to be a Heriot University academic to work out how to make
what?
A tweed
was
blazer.
I went to Edinburgh, so I should remember
you
that.
You do not need to be an academic to work out how to make this blazer that I'm wearing, David, taste of Guinness.
God, when am I picking up my tweed blazer? Now I want it. Oh,
it's
lovely.
A tweed.
Okay, Newcastle 2, Chelsea 1, the league leaders, Rog, my beloved Chelsea, stumble at St James's Park, ending a 23-game unbeaten run in all competitions, 15 games in the Premier League, just 4 minutes after coming on substitute Papis Cisse, slotted home. That was in the 57th minute. The Senegalese striker added a second in the 78th minute. Didier Drogba, he had a glancing header. Yeah, pulled one back for Jose Mourinho's men. But the Magpies, hold on, we're a big team, and continue their move up the table, Rog.
At Scalia's Boona tweeted at Men in Blazers, Q Davo, talking about a campaign.
Yeah, I mean, I actually haven't even mentioned campaign this season. But it is... Here's the alarming thing. Let me start with the negatives before I go positive, Rog. I'm going to start with the negatives. There is this worrying aspect of Chelsea this season, which is these first half, these insipid first half performances. Yes, it's a tough week. They played midweek. They played Tottenham, actually played very well against Tottenham, beat them pretty handily. But these insipid first half performances come back and crack them. They didn't play horribly in this game. They didn't play badly. They missed Matic a lot. But it's just they take the foot off the gas. And if you take the foot off the gas, Rog, off the petrol, off the accelerator in this Premier League, it gets tight.
Well, the odd and interesting thing about it was that a prophetic Jose Mourinho, mm-hmm. knowing Chelsea's record against Newcastle,
which has been horrible for the past few seasons.
He said, this team, Newcastle, they play, quote, the game of their lives against Chelsea. I think it was meant to motivate his men, or Alan Pardew laughed about that.
Yeah, it was motivating Newcastle's
but
men, unfortunately.
Ultimately, it came to be a piece of prophecy.
Yeah.
The team had no Matic. Johnny Ubi Mikel brought his three names onto the field, but little in the way of security.
Yeah.
And in the way they played Chelsea, they were not superlatively confident from the off. They were more like the Starship Enterprise mm-hmm. with shields down. And they had a lot of possession. They kept looking to slip a runner in on the edge of the box in the first half. But
Very similar to their performance against Sunderland, by the way, in the North East 1 week earlier.
It was almost as if they lacked their energy. Perhaps a product of drawing on the same core eight players week in,
Absolutely
week out.
Absolutely right.
Cesc and Oscar looked ordinary. Diego Costa in that first half, he looked just incredibly menacing as opposed to a warlock who eats children's souls.
Yeah. This enormous squad, Rog, with very little squad rotation. It's been a feature of Chelsea and certainly the way that Mourinho has run Chelsea for a while.
That football disciple tweeted us and said in the first half it was a battle between Hazard's speed and Newcastle's recovery runs. Wile E. Coyote against Elmer Fudd. I actually thought Newcastle were impressive in terms of their organisation. Throughout the game, Jack Colback, Gingy power, just seemed to counter
the Ginger Messi
every opportunity. Daryl Yanmat, what a piston he is. But the story of the game really was third string keeper, Jack Olnak, a man without a Wikipedia page at time of kickoff, the third string goalkeeper.
Yeah, Tim Krul injured, Rob Elliott goes off, injures himself on that goalkeeper.
And with a name, Jack. which seems more like a third-generation blacksmith or cooper of cider barrels than a professional football player. And when we think about Newcastle, David, what do we think of? We think of Nouveau Chateau.
Yeah, Nouveau Chateau. They love the French players, Rog.
The most French team in the world. But suddenly they had on Jack Colback, Stephen Taylor, Jack Olmwick, Paul Dummett, Sammy Amiobi, all part of the Youth Academy and all very, very, very English.
Yeah, certainly an impressive performance by Newcastle, Rog. But it was the Senegalese Papiss Cissé, Rog, who turned the game.
Yes, indeed. 7 goals in 9 games.
Yeah.
For Cissé.
Yeah.
When that first
looking forward to seeing him in a Chelsea shirt.
Oh, when that first goal went in.
Yeah.
There's a few things I like more than seeing John Terry on his bum.
Yeah, I know.
On the goal line before then. Mm-hmm. My first thought, and I'd love to hear yours, we've seen this before. Chelsea have been behind in a Premier League game 3 times.
Mentally tough, Roger.
This season, but they always went on to win.
Yeah.
When that first goal went in, David, how did you feel?
Well, it wasn't too early. Hence, I didn't tweet too early. A second half goal at home. Really, the classic too early goal, Rog, is scored on the road, certainly at Stamford Bridge in the first half. You just don't want to go up on Chelsea in the first half at Stamford Bridge, or even right at the beginning of the second half at Stamford Bridge. When you're at home and a goal, you know, what was that? That was a 57th minute, Rog. That's a pretty good time to go and score a goal. And yet, you think about Chelsea, resilient, mentally tough, lots of people. They've got, you look at the subs bench, they've got people they can come on. I wasn't actually that worried. And certainly, Chelsea threatened to come back into the game.
Yeah, Diego Costa, he knuckled down, he took off his gloves.
Oh, he took off his gloves, Roger.
Nudie jazz hands, that means business. Mm-hmm. But I thought Colaccini was magnificent.
He humped the skipper.
He humped the Brazilian Spaniard like a horny Wheaton Terrier.
Yeah.
At Blingram. Mm-hmm. Tweeted this to say, Diego Costa removing his gloves, it's the equivalent to Stallone turning his hat round backwards in Over the Top.
Yeah.
But it wasn't to be, Dave.
No, because they got a second. They doubled the pleasure, doubled the fun, Rog. 2-goal lead, 78th minute, and it's that man Cissé again.
Stephen Taylor then got sent off. A little bit of a flurry at the end.
Yeah, it was a fantastic goal from Didier Drogba. I thought it was. It was a great set-piece delivery from Cesc Fabregas. Drogba, you just look at his concentration on the ball. I know you're going to talk about what Jack Almwick was doing, but he never looked at the keeper. He was only ever looking at the ball. That was his focus, and he pulled one back. And at that point, I thought we might win the game.
You look at that goal, by the way. Look at Yaki. I pronounce his name like Hammers.
Presents, I like it.
Spells Hammers.
I like it.
Rodriguez, a hack. Almanac. If you look at it, it's just like this orange blur charging bizarrely. Bizarrely, but also very Newcastle-y. Mm-hmm. I mean, he looked every bit of keeper with no Wikipedia. He only gets a 58 rating on FIFA for positioning.
Uh-huh.
But I bet if FIFA actually had a punching rating, he'd get like high 80s.
Yeah.
Like any true Newcastle fan, he just appeared primed to punch anything he could. The ball, Costa, a police horse outside the stadium.
Well, he made a couple of good saves at the end
he
of
did.
The game, Rog.
He did.
One long-range shot that was moving in the air from Felipe Luis. Diego Costa, with probably the longest-range attempt he's made in the Premier League, he saved that one nicely. Tipped it over the bar.
Chelsea had spent the first 80 minutes defending like Liverpool, but right at the end, Newcastle had become very, very Arsenal-y.
Yeah.
And it did seem, you did, until the end, you did think that Chelsea were going to find a way not just to come back, but to win it.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, it nets out, and this is where I get positive and annoy people, and why I say campaign a lot, campaign, is that this was not a great performance from Chelsea. This was not an embarrassing performance. This wasn't the wheels going off. This was a pretty, they went down, 2 opportunistic goals, dominated possession. I know the game is about putting the ball in the net, not putting in your own. Fighting, 2-1 loss at Newcastle. Other teams will go there and do
that. At the final whistle, at Ekno7 tweeted this to say, 2003 Arsenal, they were the invincible team.
Yeah.
Of course, are going all 72 Dolphins right now. We love Larry Sonka on this podcast. Alan Pardew said after the game about old Jack, he said he'll definitely win our Cool Dude Award at the Christmas party. Our Cool Dude Award, David.
That's too much.
And he probably meant it. My only disappointment was that Pardew didn't elect to shake Mourinho's hand and then head down the tunnel before the final whistle went.
Before, 2-1 up.
Did you enjoy Mourinho's smirk through the final minutes, trying to pretend like he didn't, with every ounce of his energy, wish that his team remained undefeated? He was like Bob Barker in that Happy Gilmore fight scene, smiling every time he was punched in the face. The price is wrong, bitch! How did your first sad nap of the season feel, David?
Yeah, it was a sad nap, but I had Arlo, the GDOP, with me, who started sleeping, Rog, weirdly this weekend. The bizarre effect that the Chelsea loss on him had on him. He started sleeping on top of his crate.
Like Snoopy.
Like Snoopy. But it's a very strange act because once he would go to sleep up there, he'd then wake up and he couldn't jump down from there. So he has the ability to jump up and get up there, but he doesn't have the ability to jump down. So then he'd wake up and cry.
Truma will
that
do
is about as sad a nap as you can have when
Truma
you wake
will do
up and
that
cry.
To an infant, David. Yeah, Truma will difficult. Do that to an infant. I thought Mourinho handled it very, very classily. Mm-hmm. He was very angry about Newcastle's ball boys not dropping the ball back into play quick enough. Then mm-hmm. he kept saying to the interviewer, no complaints, no complaints. Mm-hmm. Then complaining again. He must mm-hmm. be a nightmare partner to yeah. have if you're Mourinho's partner. No, there's nothing wrong. There's yeah. nothing wrong. Then giving you
I wonder if there's another Mourinho who tells Mourinho to stop complaining, Rog. It would be much more fun to hang out with.
Here's what I think, David. Okay. What does the loss mean?
I mean, it's in some ways... It's good. It reminds them that they're still in a real race. They're still in a real fight for the title. And it probably, you know, has Mourinho feeling a little bit that he's got to get more out of certain players in the squad. You know, the one thing I do notice is that, and you mentioned it, that you know, those trying to slip those balls through the top of the box all the time. Very little width for Chelsea. And I think that Chelsea, maybe it's players like Andre Schürrle, you know, Willian, you know, not a bad performance from Willian this time. But, you know, they need more width. They need more running on the sides. And they need their fullbacks. They need Dave and they need Ivanovic to get up. We saw Felipe Luis. He played pretty well. We just need more width.
Because to me, this loss means little.
Yeah.
But how Chelsea react against Hull, Stoke and West Ham in the upcoming games, that means everything.
But also, Chelsea are in four competitions.
I was going to say, this loss may even be a boon. And it hurts me to say this, Dave. Yeah. It may God, be a boon
so
in the long run.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to get immersed in the kind of competitive, sharp edge of the Champions League.
Yep.
They're going to be in the thick, however thick the title race does turn out to become.
Yeah.
And I think they'll be grateful not to have the added pressure of the invincible storyline,
yep.
which will ultimately exhaust them possibly as much as their opponents would.
Yeah.
But for Newcastle, what a season. Starting with a winless seven games, then unbelievably countering narrative by winning five in a row. They're now in danger of going back into the toilet, but come back out and overturn Chelsea. This is the team that's fighting narrative flips as much as they are the teams that they're facing week to week.
And if the season had started in October, Rog, they would currently be second in the table behind Manchester City. Pretty amazing.
But it doesn't, and they're not. At Munbagri tweeted us to say, Alan Pardew is unleashing his inner Sam Tarley, surviving mm-hmm. death, and suddenly, he doesn't know how, claiming the scalp of a White Walker.
Yeah.
I'd say about Newcastle, they were not as bad as they seemed at the outset. They're also not as good as they seem right now. The story that...
That's the thing about teams in stripes, Rog. Very tough to judge a team in stripes. Teams in stripes are never as bad. Vertical stripes. Could be horizontal stripes too. I haven't analysed that theory. But teams in vertical stripes, whether they're red and white, black and white, blue and white... They are rarely as bad as they appear to be. They're rarely as good as they appear to be.
It's a statement that life is not black and white.
It's like grey. They may as well wear a grey jersey.
It's what Primo Levi says. The grey zone. Life is not about black and white, Dave. The story out in Newcastle that was quite fascinating in the run-up and really rather unbelievable in terms of Premier League footballers and their brains or lack of them. Newcastle United's Cheick Tioti apologises for driving car while swigging and holding bottle of champagne. Mm-hmm. I deeply regret my actions. I'm sorry if I caused offence.
Yeah.
He was caught on video just driving around Newcastle whilst chugging a bottle of champers. That was before the game.
Yeah.
After the game, I imagine everyone in Newcastle, Davo, was driving around with a champagne bottle in one hand, a pint of Newcastle Brown in the other. It's their version of firing Kalashnikovs off in the sky for victory, Davo.
So true. To your point, Rog, about not as good. They sit seventh in the table, Rog, with 23 points. Their goal difference is -1 right now. Down the country a little bit to the Potteries. Stoke, 3. Arsenal, 2. The Gunners lose a 5-goal thriller at the Britannia. Peter Crouch opened the scoring just 19 seconds in from point-blank range. The Premier League's answer to Oliver Twist, Boyan. And Jonathan Walters added 2 more before halftime. A more resolute Arsenal emerged in the second half, but a Santi Cazorla penalty and thumping Aaron Ramsey volley were not enough. You know what my regret is about this game, Rog?
What?
My regret is that it didn't go the other way around. I would have far more enjoyed, not that I take any pleasure out of an Arsenal loss, I'd have far more enjoyed to see Arsenal go 2-0 ahead in the first half and then concede 3 in the second half, rather than trying to come back and then just not quite make it at the end.
Whenever Arsenal lose,
yeah,
the Men in Blazers television show, we get so many Arsenal fans saying it's going to be too painful to watch tonight.
we need Arsenal.
I am starting to think about doing the Arsenal games on the show, a bit like North Korea show their football team, where
good
we only show
propaganda.
Arsenal's goals.
That's so true.
2-0
win.
Great
2-0 win.
Up to Stoke, doing the business.
Well
Arsene
played.
Wenger.
Yeah, clear penalty.
But this was a game that was drunk, David.
Yeah.
I mean, Mark Hughes, the Stoke manager, he said he knew his team would win the second he saw Arsenal's team sheet.
Huh.
The back four that Arsene Wenger later admitted was a little
tender in the tackle.
Yeah, they were very tender in the tackle.
Tender in the tackle.
He sent his side out and
tender
demanded
in the tackle.
A fast start. Arsenal, this was the Arsenal that had won 3 in a row. Clean sheets had been their motif. But Stoke somehow, David, they're in Arsenal's heads.
What manager says about his defence that they're a little tender in the tackle? Could you imagine any American football coach saying that about his team? Tender in the tackle. I love it.
Right, how does it work, David? Stoke are just in their heads. I mean, the Londoners, it's like they've internalised. It's not even the same players over and over again. But the culture of a club, they've internalised a trip to Stoke. For them, it's like Roman legions quaking on the eve of battle with Gotham Picks.
I don't even know that Stoke are in their heads. I think Arsenal are in their own heads.
Arsenal have won just once at Stoke's home since 2008 when Stoke were promoted.
Mm-hmm.
And to begin with, Stoke used to do it with a punch in the face and a knee in the crotch, the English way.
A long throw-in.
And they, by the way, the Stoke fans still boo. They still heckle Aaron Ramsey for having the temerity to have his own leg broken in a horror tackle from Ryan Shawcross.
Yeah, I know, all his fault.
It's shocking. It's absolutely repulsive. But here, Stoke just did Arsenal in by allowing them to be incredibly Arsenal-y.
Yeah.
I mean, 19 seconds, David. 19 seconds. Less a goal, more Exhibit A, that you can't always score too early.
Yeah, I mean, and at home, once again, against Arsenal, an early goal is gonna kill them. It's not a too early situation. But you've got to imagine that the last thing that Arsene has said to his team before they go through the tunnel is, look, watch out for the big skinny lad. Watch out for the big skinny lad. He goes from A to B very well. He wins the ball at C and he nods it down to D. It's a... And they were unable. Peter Crouch is the most... It's the most obvious game plan in the Premier League, and they were ill-equipped to deal with it throughout the game.
Yeah, I mean, in this one, Chambers headed air instead of the ball.
Yeah.
Hector Bellerin fell over
That's
in the heat of battle.
That's never a good move. Yeah.
I mean, Peter Crouch stabbed the ball home with the grace and beauty of Zooey Deschanel in roller skate.
Yeah, similar.
I mean, it was the earliest goal Arsenal have ever shipped in the Premier League.
Huh.
But this, to me, was more shades of last season, where Arsenal were blown away in the first half by Liverpool, Man City and Chelsea. But this is all the more humiliating, not because they were scored, not because they were scored upon by the equivalent of Shaggy from Scooby-Doo, if he'd been stretched out
Shaggy
on the rack.
Yeah.
By the way, every time Peter Crouch scores, I think of Sean Bradley.
Really? Yeah.
The storming moment.
Yeah.
The death stick.
Yeah.
The Mormon mantis.
Yeah.
19 seconds, David. Mm-hmm. As we said on the show, the average time Englishmen need to make love.
Uh-huh.
In 7 of 15 Premier League games, Arsenal have conceded a goal from the opposition's first shot on target.
Yeah, the only good thing for Arsenal is it didn't come from an Arsenal attack, which is a positive progress for Arsenal. The ball was clearly in the centre of the field.
Yeah, well, I mean, I also in my game notes had bright side Arsenal. Uh-huh. You found a way to avoid a heartbreaking loss after building a fairly comprehensive lead.
Yeah.
Because then they leaked a second to Boyan.
Yeah.
Who, as we did know, is like Oliver Twist coming of age in Fagin's den.
Yeah. Who
Please,
knew?
Sir, can I have more?
Who knew? Great player. Yeah, coming from Barcelona, Rog.
Via pretty well every major club and just kind of decreasing the stature, decreasing the promise, decreasing... he was meant to be the future Messi. When I watch him play now, and watch him ghost in through
he's got speed.
Arsenal's
he's got
defense.
Speed, unteachable speed.
I imagine Alison Williams watching him at home and then calling up her agent to see if she could possibly play Boyan. in Boyan the Musical.
I don't know that offer's going to be forthcoming after the Peter Pan ratings.
It'd be beautiful. What
did
they
you
like?
Watch Peter Pan?
I did watch Peter Pan.
The English accent in Peter Pan were so poor. Honestly, it made my soccer seem like I am actually American. It was just shocking.
I only watched it to remind me exactly why I do hate Broadway.
And Christopher Walken, it was the most... It was the day they got Christopher Walken, I guaranteed, like up and down the corridors of NBC, they were like, we got Walken! He's in! We've got him! It's going to be amazing!
When is he going to play Neil Warnock? Neil Warnock.
He'd be very good at that.
He'd be unbelievable.
And Christopher Walken was amazing.
We just got to thin out your eyebrows a bit, Chris.
But not amazing for anybody trying to make a great production of Peter Pan. Oh, my God, it was... There was a swan scene, he's in a boat, and you're just looking at him and you think, oh, it's just an old man in a boat.
There was a
My son is terrified of Captain Hook. I mean, terrified of Captain Hook. And he watched the whole thing with a smile on his face. He couldn't, no terror whatsoever.
There was a moment in that show when he looked so bored and so embarrassed, I thought he was just going to pull out a revolver and reenact the scene from the Russian roulette scene from the Deer Hunter.
Oh, the Deer Hunter, yeah.
Which is also probably how Arsene Wenger felt when that third goal went in. Uh-huh. To be fair to him, Davo, corners, I think, were a recent invention that had been invented after he took charge at Arsenal.
Yeah.
And Walters didn't so much score as embarrass every flat-footed defender. Five Arsenal defenders were attracted by the whiff of Peter Crouch's aftershave.
Yes, okay, boys, we are going to do variation on zonal marking. Five players, zonal mark. And
one.
Five players, mark the big one.
3-0 down.
The big Arico Vert, the big string bean.
The big death stick. Yeah. You you watch Arsenal Football Club television, AFTV.
Yeah.
Google it. Google Angry Claude. There's an amazing character they interview after every Arsenal game, Angry Claude. And he just starts screaming. He has a meltdown on AFTV, especially if you're a Spurs fan. Google it now. It'll make you feel amazing.
Yeah.
3-0 down to a pub team.
To a pub
he kept
team.
Screaming, to a pub team. Which is possibly the greatest kind of abuse an Englishman could talk about.
Team.
Another one.
A pub team.
But he had Giroud ineffective. Yeah. Then Welbeck came on, potentially giving Arsenal a different edge. And Arsenal did force their way back into the game, David.
They did force their way back into the game, Rog. It was a slightly dodgy penalty decision that got them back into the game, though, Rog. Yeah. The challenge on Flamini from Diouf. Not sure there was actual contact of any matter, but maybe energy, maybe some molecules might have.
It was like he entered a graviton.
Yeah.
It was just sucked to the
some
floor.
Some gravitational pull is what you're
saying. Cazorla finish. Am I alone in imagining that Cazorla is the product, the offspring of a human who's made love to something feral.
Yeah.
Perhaps a rat. Does he not look like a rat?
You're like Ratatouille. He does look a little bit like the characters in Ratatouille.
And the Ramsey goal, we don't need to mark you anymore because you're crap.
Yeah, but he's suddenly not crap the last couple of games. But yeah, it was a piece of poor defending.
All the more just to torture Arsenal fans because ultimately it meant nothing. 3-2 loss.
Mm-hmm.
Frustration is building, Dave.
Yeah.
Great video of Arsene Wenger boarding the train back to London. Huge frustration building, best represented by the Arsenal fans that waited to cheer the team back onto their train, back to London.
Amazing piece of video, Roger.
It is an amazing piece of video. They shout at Joel Campbell, Joely, mate, do the best thing you can. Get out while you still can, Joely. And then Wenger walks across the platform and they just boo aggressively in his face. I mean, he walks past with his lips pursed, Wenger. 65-year-old, absolutely getting battered. It's like watching people, it's like seeing Elton John fall off his chair at the tennis game. It's like laughing at grandpa. Is it correct, David, this frustration that's building around Wenger?
Well, I think it's pointless because I don't think Arsenal are going to get rid of Arsene Wenger. But I can understand why Arsenal fans are frustrated. They've got terrific players and they seem to suffer. They seem to make the same mistakes in games again and again and again. And Arsene does seem to be somewhat stubborn in the way that he wants his teams to play football. Having said that, Arsenal in sixth place, they are just 5 points out of third, just 4 points out of fourth, which for them is a trophy. So I don't know that it's so bleak. I think it's all going to ultimately be fine for Arsenal yet again.
I think the frustration comes less from the performances and more from just like the apparent lack of vision and cohesive plan. I mean, going into this campaign with no world-class defensive midfielder or central defensive cover, it's like watching a teenager.
But they haven't had a defensive midfielder. I can't remember. Have they had a defensive midfielder,
in
really?
1963.
Since Vieira.
They had Wilf Bullsworthy.
Yeah.
It's like watching a teenager get into a cart to get into third base at a local love spot when you know there's a serial killer on the loose. You just don't do it. And the fact that he's done it, I think, is starting to feel like stubbornness where there was once strategy.
Yeah.
But I've got to tell you, when I shut my eyes and put my head down on the pillow, I still hear angry Claude scream, "Arson, you tosser." They play Newcastle this weekend, 6-7. Newcastle with 6 wins in their last 9 Premier League matches.
You know, I question, are Arsenal really worse than Manchester United? This is the Monday game, Rog. Southampton 1, Manchester United 2. United snatch, Rog, genuinely snatch all 3 points at St Mary's behind 2 goals from Robin van Persie. Despite looking dangerous for stretches, the Saints' only goal came from Graziano Pelle. United have now won 5 in a row and a third for the first time since August 2013. Great result. Not sure about the performance, Rog.
Well, nice news for Manchester United fans.
Yeah.
The toymaker.
Yeah.
He's managed to fix Robin van Persie.
Gepetto.
Oh, Gepetto.
Yeah.
And his little wood carvery.
Yeah.
He's worked on him.
Yeah,
that
Pinocchio.
Second goal. It was like Robin van Persie of old.
Yeah,
that
it
finish.
Was. Of your...
7 goals in 7 games against my beloved, newly beloved Southampton. By the way, that second goal was a product of the first pass between Robin van Persie and Rooney since 2013.
That is amazing.
I made
that is
that
amazing.
Up. It's also not
oh,
true.
Really? Okay.
It just feels like it.
Okay.
United have won the 5th game on the run. But you look at it, Robin van Persie, amazing. De Gea, amazing. Manchester United's atmospherics, the fan base who travel with them, amazing. What else, so David? They registered 3 shots at goal. Southampton had 15. And football journalists all left wondering out loud when they'd seen a less impressive victory.
Yeah, but still, you win because you put the ball in the back of the net more times than your opposition. I think there are some, you know, continuing to play the ball quite quickly. I thought that Fellaini had a good game again. Starting to look, to me, I thought he had a good game. I think he's starting, playing, sitting further back. I think he's got a little bit of muscle in midfield, Rog. And ultimately, Southampton, your football is so much about confidence, so much about confidence. And you can just feel Southampton's confidence wavering a little bit.
Well, I want to apologise to Southampton fans. I feel very much like Jonah and the whale for the entire club and city. No sooner had I set out for Nineveh,
yeah,
or Southampton in this case, your club slumped.
Yeah,
I literally flew in last Wednesday.
Well, no, it's the moment you announced that you were going.
Yeah,
really.
Then they lost the first big game. Then I arrived, Dave. I landed at the airport. My driver, he answered the phone when I arrived. What was his phone ring?
Oh, it was the Chelsea song, Harry J and the All-Stars, The Liquidator. Brilliant. That's the big Chelsea song they play before every home game.
I said to him, are you a Chelsea fan?
Chelsea!
I said, you go anymore? And he goes, not anymore. Now they don't allow the...
Misses the violence, they doesn't he? Misses the trouble.
They don't allow the violence, yeah, so he doesn't go anymore.
No point.
But I got in the car with this man. I don't know why I got in the car with this man, having heard what he just told me.
Reminded you of me.
Do you mind putting the game on?
Yeah.
And he did. It was 86 minutes in, and the second my driver turned on the radio, Arsenal promptly scored. I felt even sicker. I felt personally responsible. I have to say, at least I got Pelle scoring again for the first time since he netted in the rout of Sunderland on October the 18th. Southampton, never been there before. It is one grim spot.
Yeah, Titanic set off from Southampton, Rog.
Benny Hill was born in Southampton.
Wow.
Jane Austen lived in Southampton for a year. We've just relived my opening of the show.
Yeah.
But I asked one of the coaches whether he liked living it. And he goes, it's an industrial city that's never recovered from being bombed to crap by the Germans. Those are his words. It's very true. But I'm making this film that will air on December the 26th on NBC SN. I'm really fascinated
Boxing Day.
By this story of a team who were languishing in the third tier of English football, close to administration in 2009. And they recognised that if they had to compete, they had to Billy Bean it and find inefficiencies and competitive edges that the game's established powers were either too lazy or too uncreative to see all around youth development, scouting.
Yeah, developed so many great young
medical
players, Rog.
I interviewed a load. I mean, Gareth Bale, Walcott, Oxlade-Chamberlain, pretty well the entire Liverpool team.
Yeah.
I mean, I interviewed a lot of the young guys who were there today. Hopefully we captured the Bale of tomorrow. But I've got to say, Champions League talk, yeah. It exists only outside the club. Inside, all of them are talking about top eight.
Yeah.
I can also confirm that Ronald Koeman has got a head that's bigger than a horse.
You showed me a picture, Rog. His head, and you're next to him in the picture.
Yeah.
And his head looks four times the size of your head.
And
you seem to be standing,
ten paces
in front of him.
He told me to stand 10 paces in front of him so our heads would be equal, but it
that's
didn't work.
Genius.
United are third,
yeah.
And yet they are crap.
Uh-huh.
Should United fans be? To me, they're the perfect talisman of this season, which everyone, every team appears to have stood in dog turd, apart from Chelsea.
City have done well, Rog.
Should we say they're third and playing poorly? Imagine how good they'll be when they actually click. Or should we say they're third, how long really will they be
Although
third?
Although there are a lot of Manchester United fans I know sitting around because I hear from them saying, OK, 15 games in, we're 8 points behind Chelsea. You know what? We could still do OK.
With a defence that's like this one, flung together.
Uh-huh.
They went to a back three in this game. To say it was shaky and awkward was to be kind. They now host Liverpool this weekend in what used to be one of the biggest games of the season, but which United icon turned English broadcaster Gary Neville just suggested will, quote, resemble a pub match, the dog and duck versus the red lion.
Hate to bring this up, Rog. Man City 1, Everton 0. City closed the gap on Chelsea courtesy of a 24th-minute Yaya Touré penalty kick. Despite winning the game, City lose the Premier League's most informed striker. Sergio Aguero, Rog, as you mentioned earlier, went off in the third minute with a knee injury that could mean a short-lengthy...
We won't be seeing him again this year, David.
Little bit lengthiest, I don't know, layoff.
Yeah, I mean, that's possibly the biggest moment of the game. It's Sergio Aguero injury. They say it's a distension of the lateral ligament of his left knee.
Whoa, what's that?
He's got a bad bang.
Bad bang?
Yeah, he's got a bad
got
bang.
A bit of a knock.
He's been scanned and scanned and scanned. I think his loss may outweigh the gain of the 3 points because City have got Edin Dzeko, who's still coming back into fitness.
Yeah.
Calf injury. Stefan Jovetic, who's a bit crocked.
He's very good in pre-season.
Who do they have who's going to dare to Josie?
Yeah. Poor Milner. I don't know
well,
who
on,
they're
on came
have.
Jose Angel Pozo, 18-year-old Spaniard.
Yeah.
Who really is a symbol of how thin their striker coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Where's number 78?
Whoa.
He's the sack king. He's only 18. He's the Bruce Smith art shell.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Munoz. A lot of people suggested 1978 was a tribute to the year his dad was actually born. But City had all the movement, they had the organisation, they had the ideas. Everton had none of that. Gareth Barry exhausted, Sylvain Distin slow. Besic, love watching him, he's just wired completely wrong. And the penalty decision was very, very, very generous. Even James Milner didn't appear for a foul. He just tried to get up and chase the scurrying ball.
Mm-hmm.
But when it was given, numb shock and resignation just kind of cast across Everton's brow, Davo. Atiyar Bradley asks, what minute do you change from don't let Everton score too early to please, please God, let Everton score?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting. It depends whether you're at home or on the road. I've spoken about this a lot, Rog.
89th minute is my answer
really?
To that.
Yeah, I think more like in the 50s, Rog.
Yeah, so that's it. Everton briefly threatened when Barkley came on. Joe Hart,
Son's moustache. They deserved, I've got to tell you, there's some terrible challenges, Rog. It just means some red cards for Man City.
Yeah, but the honest truth is Everton was so impotent that City could have killed off the game by just conceding corners one after the other. Why is it that nobody can take a Premier League corner anymore without hitting the first man?
Yeah.
We are the champions of England, sang the City fans. Watching Everton right now, it reminds me of having to visit my grandmother. Late in life, she became very senile. She had a budgie, which when she was in a good mood, she'd get a budgie. And then when she got a bit depressed, the budgie would disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And then she'd get in
Where'd
a better
you think
mood.
Where do you think it went?
I think she probably killed it, to be honest.
But how?
She killed them all Joey. She pretended in her mind they were all the same one. I think she'd kill them, throw them out.
You saw through that.
Yeah, but it became going to see her in a house, it became a very squalid home. She wouldn't move out. And watching Everton with their inability to complete a midfield pass without a turnover, it gives me the same feeling I had when I used to have to visit her. It's just an obligation. And made me feel helpless and dark about life.
Oh, I need a sad nap, Rog. We've got to cheer this stuff up.
If Everton played a football team that included Johnny Cash, Leonard Cohen up front, Lou Reed patrolling in the middle, mm-hmm. Edith Piaf and Tracy Chapman shoring up the back, I think, honestly, that team would be less depressing than Everton right now, Dave-O. News out, Tim Howard's book, Craps on Brad Friedel.
Oh.
Says he wouldn't provide a reference for me when I came to United.
He's too old, Rog. He's old man Friedel.
Well, yeah, that was a
good... He doesn't have his quill.
Somebody, I can't remember who tweeted this to say it feels like Daddy and Grandpa are fighting. What do you think about that, by the way?
I don't know. I haven't read the book.
I did. Yeah. All I say is the most US goalies proper hate each other.
Yeah.
And their one true area of competition in the US team is goalkeeper. So it's a very, very bitterly... But this footballer biography... Who's your favourite footballer biography?
Oh, that Zlatan book was good. Tony Cascarino. That was a great book. I love Tony Cascarino.
Perlo.
Yeah.
The three of them, so brilliantly written, they sell themselves.
Yeah. All written by Zlatan.
And he ghostwrites all of them. Every good book is ghostwritten by Zlatan.
Yeah.
But everybody else's football bio, they seem to only besmirch their image and their legend rather than burnishing it.
Yeah. No, you're right, Rog. Very enjoyable game, this one, Rog. West Ham 3, Swansea City 1. Andy Carroll, he's back. The plodding, ponytailed Englishman heads home twice for the Hammers. The first goal was amazing, Rog. 15:38 into the season, and Big Sam's boys remain top four. West Ham more for real, it seems, than Southampton. And dare I say it, more for real than Newcastle.
Swansea, talking about for real, they seem to be the masters of scoring early, dancing badly.
Yeah.
Thank you, Wilfred Boney, a man who loves to channel Cotton Banks dance moves.
Oh, he loves to dance.
And then they throw games away.
Yeah.
We love this moment more than any other, when Andy Carroll scored that first goal.
It's what he was built to do.
Is that what he was built to do?
Well, it's one of the things he was built to do.
So I think, he's built to fall off bar stools while drinking shots of Jägermeister at a casino in the early years out of the morning. It was his first goal
young
since
lady.
March.
Yeah.
First goal since March.
Yeah.
He was built to eat sushi off naked models.
Yeah.
He was built to kind of light his farts, to whip towels at other people's bottoms, to give out wedgies.
Uh-huh.
But that first goal, David.
It was just a great... You don't see many headed goals. I remember that goal he scored in the Euros, Rog. You were there in Polkrane, the goal against Sweden. Fantastic goal. He can score headed goals like almost no other player in the world, Rog. This goal, it just came to you. He twists his neck and he nods it back the other way. You just don't see people try to even do that.
He needed the noble physics-defying calculation of trajectory, angle, wind speed.
You're right.
Gave me the thickening. But Swansea didn't learn their lesson. They left him unmarked at a corner. Did they not realise he was a man having his wonder game before he returns to the injury list?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
There's a few teams I love watching more than West Ham right now.
Uh-huh.
Carroll's old school potency and the intelligent speed of Sacco, who added a third after returning from injury as a substitute. They can just punish opponents in a couple of complimentary ways. We are going to win the league, chanted the West Ham fans. I would love to live in a world where that was true, David.
Jenkinson's turned into a good player as well, Rog, looking very, very good for West Ham. In a slightly less entertaining game, Rog, Liverpool 0, Sunderland 0, a turgid affair at Anfield. Sees Josie in the starting 11, Rog, but Steven Gerrard on the bench. Brendan Rodgers rested the Liverpool talisman ahead of this week's must-win Champions League game.
Yep, Jozy Altidore started for the first time since March 26.
Wow.
Which is also against Liverpool.
That's 1826.
He's so crafty.
Yeah.
Phase one of his game is lull opposition defence into false sense of security by ceding possession.
Genius.
Phase two, still a work in progress. But Liverpool, their game plan seemed to be get Raheem Sterling the ball and hope he can do things. Or else draw a foul that can let somebody else do things.
Yeah.
Raheem's decision-making was erratic here. Coutinho and Lambert, they made three passes to each other, one of which was at kickoff.
He's so good in training, evidently, Raheem Sterling, that all they want to do is give him the ball and have him go and perform a party trick, Rog.
But this was the second successive Premier League game at Anfield when neither side directed the shot on target in the first half. Gerrard came on 67 minutes in. Anfield rose at once to bring back their god. But there's something about the Matthew Brodericks about that guy now.
Really?
Yeah, when you look at him, he's like a man who once had it all, knows you know that he once had it all, and knows you know that he's not what he once was. He seems to be like cloaked in a grey pallor of self-awareness.
Still a very good theatre actor, Matthew Broderick, Rog.
Five points from the last three away games for Sunderland after their 8-0 deluge at Southampton. Crass tabloid rumour-mongering, David, that Liverpool's owners tapping out André Villas-Boas as a possible successor.
Wow, he must have submitted a
an excellent PowerPoint.
That's what
Rog.
It said in the article.
Yeah.
They'd asked him to submit a PowerPoint. They weren't sniffing. They wanted to see what that PowerPoint would say.
Yeah.
Hiring AVB, it's the equivalent of dating Renee Zellweger.
Yeah.
But Rodgers does increasingly have a look of a Vanilla Ice or an MC Hammer, a man who once had it all and lost it. Now just has a couple of pairs of parachute pants in the corner of his wardrobe to remind him he once flew too close to the sun.
Oh, very, very sad. Rog, in other games, Aston Villa 2, Leicester City 1. Villa's Alan Hutton scores his first Premier League goal in 4 years, Rog, and extends the Foxes' winless streak to 10. QPR 2, Burnley 0, Charlie Austin's English hat-trick. He had a goal, he had an assist, he had a red card. That lifts Harry's men out of the relegation zone for the first time since mid-September. Spurs 0, Palace 0, despite silky smooth pieces of skill from Christian Eriksen and Yannick Bolasie. Neither team found the net at White Hart Lane.
I say about Spurs, they've now failed to win 5 of their 8 home Premier League matches.
Mm-hmm.
And this was probably the most disconcerting and lacklustre of all the games I've watched of theirs. That 2-1 win against Everton feels like an eon ago, and the boos rained down at half-time and full-time. I'm only saying it because DeAndre Yedlin has now been granted a work permit.
Whoa.
And he's expected to complete his move to Tottenham imminently. I can't imagine he's going to thrive in such an uncertain, occasionally toxic atmosphere.
That's exciting to me. I think he'll make the team. And in the final Premier League game, Rog, in the third goalless draw of the week, Hull 0, West Brom 0, Hull goalkeeper Alan McGregor saved the 9th-minute Graham Dorans penalty, and neither team was able to break through there. After
getting awfully crowded at the bottom of the table, no one really falling away.
Mm-hmm.
West Brom and Hull seem to have momentarily lost a pulse.
Yeah.
But the truth about the relegation zone is we're not going to know how it really is going to shake up until after the January transfer window. Harry Redknapp said an interesting thing post-game. Uh-huh. He talked about his intention to pillage MLS for some loan deals.
Really?
His eyes on Robbie Keane.
Yeah.
I love the idea of MLS as a key wild card in the Premier League relegation race.
Interesting. In MLS Cup, Rog, the Los Angeles Galaxy defeated New England 2-1. Robbie Keane's overtime winner for the Galaxy sends St. Landon, Rog, off to retirement as a champion.
Not the best commercial for MLS, David.
Yeah, it wasn't a thrilling game, really.
No, but I did hope Landon would do a John Crook, hit a single and just stroll off the field immediately into retirement. Instead, he burst around the field chasing after Robbie Keane and generally begging him to pass the ball, which Keane decided not to do. Fascinating about Landon. You felt there was a sense of unease between the players and Bruce Arena and Landon during the playoffs. This kind of narrative retiring was something that they wanted to focus on the game, not the narrative retiring. But at the end, I expected a chariot of fire and horses to appear and Landon to go up to heaven in a whirlwind. Didn't really happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. It was the perfect way for him to retire, Rog. It was the perfect way to go out. Like, on paper, it was amazing. But actually, in video, it wasn't that amazing. Maybe in real life it was, but in video...
Needed more fire for fighting.
I'm looking forward to seeing your film, Rog.
I mean, he retires as a complex man who played a simple game. He loved that simple game, but he didn't really like the business that surrounds it. He's got the demeanour of a child star in Hollywood,
uh-huh.
David.
Yeah,
who was kind of been deprived of his childhood by being in the biz, and he wants his life back.
Mm-hmm.
Last thing he said to us was, many people would have crumbled trying to be a professional footballer and battle the depression that I've been battling with. Mm-hmm. And now he's got his life back. It's going to be fascinating to see what he does with it. If I were him, I'd hit the donuts very, very hard this week. LA Galaxy, they survived David Beckham leaving. They survived Andrew Shue's retirement, David.
Yeah, whoa.
But who's going to be the face of US soccer now Landon's retired? Mix, Josie, Rebecca Lowe, Kyle Beckerman.
Kyle Beckerman, Rog.
Or Jurgen Klinsmann.
It's got to be Beckerman.
Or Gedeon Zelalem.
Yeah.
I'd like the winner, LA Galaxy, to now play Club Lyon in a battle
maybe
of the border.
Maybe Alex Morgan, Rog. League maybe Abby Wambach.
Well, we'll chat about that.
Yeah.
We will chat about that. But I'd love it now if the winner then go and play the best team in Mexico, in the Azteca.
Yeah.
Or right here.
That would be amazing, Rog.
That would be a game I think everyone in America would get behind.
Than amazing. Okay, this is our Xbox contest, Rog. In honour of Landon Donovan's final game, we've partnered with the GFOPs at EA Sports to give away a limited edition Landon Xbox, one of only 8 in the world. A photo is up on meninblazers.com. We want you to sum up St. Landon's career in one piece of art. It can be music, it can be writing, painting, cave drawing, Rog, anything you would like. We ask you to send them via email or social media or Raven using the hashtag Landon's Legacy.
We've got some Rog. Beautiful, beautiful entrants. One more week.
God, love all of them. Look forward to seeing more, Rog. Okay. Our guest today, Rog, a connoisseur. I love that word.
First time on this pod. Food. Of anything.
Yeah, we never had that. Of food and soccer, football, as New York Magazine's restaurant critic. He's a one-man encyclopedia of eateries worldwide. The only thing he savors more than a perfectly prepared meal is a Yaya Touré wonder strike. We welcome to the pod, Adam Platt.
Thank you, guys.
Softest hands in food criticism.
Soft does David. Have soft. He's sharing a Guinness with us. Cheers, Adam.
Cheers,
nice
guys.
To have a Guinness.
Thanks with for having
you.
Me.
Very good.
Nice, Paul. Thanks for having me.
How did the sorting hat choose you? How did Manchester City choose you?
Well, let's just talk about Manchester City first. And again, I am like any American soccer fan. I view the Man City citizens from a happy distance. I'm not sort of, I don't live and die with them, but I respect them and I like them. And I think the reason is, I don't know what Man U fans are like in the UK. In this country, they're insufferable, right? And I have many friends who are Man U fans. And they go around acting like this team is some kind of sort of gift to the world. Being a Man U fan in this country is like being a Yankee fan in, say, Taiwan or Tokyo. You know, you can go through the motions, you can have the passion, but you're not really a Yankee fan. But the Man U fans in this town just drive me insane. So when it came to picking a team after all these years, and again, a lot of it has to do with the fact that in the last 3 years, all of these teams are on TV.
Yeah.
You can watch them all.
More than they are on television.
So Man City, and also if you're an American soccer fan, you do not come to the game burdened by these ancient narratives. Right, yes. So I didn't grow up and
ancient
really thinking
back to 1992.
Right, I didn't grow up. But it seemed to me that Man City was sort of like the Mets. They're not the Yankees. It's popular to call them the Yankees. It seems to me they were like the Mets, the poor sister, and they were coming back and sort of now spanking everybody else.
So you fell in love with them. Adam Platt, contrarian, not a Manchester United fan, by definition, a City fan.
Right.
You picked them when they were little.
Yes.
Kind of.
Well, they weren't
stumbling,
really like
that, bumbling.
No, they were kicking butt. But they were, you know, I love watching them. But they seem to me like a nice alternative to Man U. And the other beloved team is Arsenal, right, in this town.
Yeah, big.
The pointy-headed journalists love Arsenal.
Oh, they love Arsenal.
So I decided I'm gonna go with Man City. It seems like a safe and happy choice.
So do you think your embrace of soccer, do you think it has anything to do with growing up with a diplomat father?
Well, it could
be. Nicholas Platt, diplomat, served all over the world,
right.
It seems.
No, I lived overseas when I was a kid. I think for most American soccer fans, sort of the gateway drug is the World Cup.
Yeah.
Right? And I found myself, I think it was in 78, working in the summer in London. And I think that was, what, the Argentinian World Cup?
Yep.
Tevez and the paper streaming down.
Every time they ran on the field,
and
it just exploded in toilet paper.
I just thought that was so fun and such a great event to watch. And then in 82, I was living, I think, in Hong Kong.
Uh-huh.
Again, in 82 in New York, the World Cup, nobody really paid attention to it except for the finals. But in a place like Hong Kong or the UK, the whole pageantry was covered for the whole month, and I thought it was fabulous. And I actually fell in love, sort of, with the French team.
Huh.
And
that's before Latini. French almost before the French.
Well, there was that.
There
was that great game that it was at the semifinal game where the German goalie killed somebody practically.
Schumacher.
Yeah.
And it wasn't called, and everybody was outraged. And also that was also the team.
The most French lot. They loved it in France. They don't know what to do with winning back then. Well, they still saw themselves as petty France, not a France
right.
qui gagne.
And that was a beautiful. And that was wasn't that Platini's team? He was on that team.
Yeah.
And so I thought he was a great player, so I followed them a little while, again from a distance. You know, I followed Zidane from a distance. And I always liked these midfield players, these great midfield players, because, you know, these scorers are mercurial and they can explode every 3 weeks and score 15 goals. But a great.
They wear jazz gloves. Yep.
Jazz gloves. But a great, and again, I'm being too much of a soccer geek here, but like a great midfielder is always great, always fun to watch, which is sort of why I like Yaya Touré.
Always involved.
always involved. Torre is up and down, but he's a wonderful character. So I love him and my daughter who plays soccer.
We often wonder what would be a filling lunch for Yaya Torre.
I don't know.
He's a big caribou boy. Sized burgers.
He's a big boy, a lot of protein.
I think he's still mourning the passing of Bennigan's.
Yeah, exactly. He needs it. So's Adam.
What's your experience of English food, Adam?
Well, English food, first of all, I've always liked English food because it's nourishing. I mean, if you look at the Man City, they show that crowd and that sort of weird powder blue, sad looking stadium, and they're all these pasty faced, fat, bald guys. They look sort of like me.
Yeah, well, and us. These are the best looking people in Manchester. You're describing.
Well, good for them. Yeah, you know. Anyway, but English food in the UK is. Obviously had a horrible reputation, and it's gotten, as you all know, it's gotten a lot better.
It has.
Carlos Tevez, noted Manchester food critic, I remember him saying it rains all the time here, and there's only two restaurants.
Well, God knows what they serve at that stadium. I don't know.
Here's the question I got for you: why have pies not taken off more in America? You love apple pie here. You've made that like the thing.
Are you talking about meat pies?
Why is the country afraid of good old fashioned horse meat?
Steak and kidney,
because
Cornish pasties.
We have hamburgers, hot dogs. We have those things. Covered.
Pizza.
We have that sort of protein on the move sort of genre cover.
I'll never let protein on the move. That's what we've got to say, Rog, whenever we do the pie things.
Protein on the move.
Now, again, there's nothing like a great, you know, bread-filled British sausage, or there's nothing like a wonderful sausage roll, even a pork pie. Pork pies are good. Even I can only consume one pork pie a month.
We should describe for everybody what a pork pie is. It's pork sausage meat wrapped in with sort of like a sort of a thin gelatin layer almost with paste.
Always cold.
Yeah.
Basically the filling is sort of...
Melton Mowbray seem to make the best of them.
The filling is like a sort of a plutonium-rich kind of suet that you often have to pound with a jackhammer.
And, the pastry's quite thick.
The pastry's thick, and like once you get it down your gut, it sort of tastes pretty good. You know, and also it's very easy to make a bad one.
We should do a pork pie prediction one of these days.
Disclosure. Disclosure. Adam is actually a paid ambassador for the English cuisine
lobby.
You wrote a beautiful thing that I read. I really like. You said these days, of course, much of the old magic of restaurants is gone. This is in the piece that you wrote about why you no longer go anonymously. Yeah. So restaurants, you said the mannered world of Eurocentric restaurateurs has been replaced by a riotous democracy of chattering TV judges, glorified restaurant bars, and tattooed comfort food cooks. I read this, and I just thought, he's just described the Premier League to me, in which the sport that we grew up with, the nostalgic kind of sort, has been replaced by, I guess, the N-word for David and me, narrative.
Yeah.
What I wanted to ask you was, does that enhance or detract from covering the restaurant business fee?
Well, I think it enhances, actually, much like I would say the Premiership. It's much more interesting.
Yeah, narrative, way better than football.
There are hundreds of narratives.
Yeah.
The food is much more accessible, and it's all over the place. It used to be there were sort of four or five fancy restaurants that all the critics would gather at and sort of, you know, clear their throats and make their tiny notes under the table. Now there's literally hundreds of them. And, there are less places for a really great meal, but there are many, many, many more places in New York and really across the country for a really good meal.
How quickly do you know that you're going to have a great meal somewhere?
Pretty quickly.
And what is the tell?
I can't explain it.
As soon as he reads the Zagat.
No, you can. They're all people who ask.
He looks in Zagat.
I look at Zagat. I don't look at that. Well, yeah, I love Zagat. Anyway, I've tried to explain this before, but there's a certain sort of just a more, it's just in the air, and you can sort of tell by the way a room looks, and some of them will look bad, some of them will look over, you know, you can just tell by the way things are presented and sort of the vibe of a restaurant, even if it's a tiny out of the way, you know, sort of coffee bar, you can really weirdly tell within 5 or 6 minutes that you're gonna, it may not be a great restaurant, but you can tell whether you're gonna enjoy it or where you can certainly tell whether it's gonna go down the tubes. You can certainly tell that. Like the negative cues are much easier to read.
Like what's a negative cue?
Negative cues would be, overweening servers who were sort of,
Solicitous,
and you know, flop sweat coming out of you. You can tell by the menu, the way it's written. I mean, the writing of a menu actually is a very skillful talent.
Oh, I like this.
No, it's okay. A skillful talent. And again, it's almost invisible. You know, take Keith McNally's restaurant. I'm sure you go to them all the time, being like-minded Englishmen.
He was looking at Dave out then.
I was looking at Dave because I'm sure he has a gilded booth in several of them.
Oh, yeah, I love his restaurants.
Of course you do. Anyway, with reason.
Yeah.
You know, but you look at those you look at the menus, and I've had my problems with his restaurants over the years, but you look at the menu, say the new one that he's going to, which is it's called Cher Chemin D.
Oh,
anyway,
God, I love
you just look at the menu.
Yeah.
And you actually know from that menu that you're in good hands.
Huh.
You can just look at it.
Because it's done with confidence. It's almost like it's produced with confidence.
It's written in a certain style. The dishes are chosen extremely carefully. And you just know, this is going to be worth my money.
Huh.
The restaurants I frequent are more in Comic Sans.
Hence you mourning Bennigan's.
But the
Bennigan's, you know.
Yeah.
Bennigan's.
My daughter told me the other day her favorite restaurant anywhere in America, it's Applebee's in Riverhead.
When we said you were coming on the show, we got the same question from just about every GFOP, all six of them. They all wanted you to look at the top of the table.
Oh, yeah.
If clubs were a restaurateur, who, Adam Platt, would they be?
All right, well, Mourinho's definitely McNally, right?
Wow, similar.
Mercurial.
Chelsea.
Talented, slightly off his rocker, right?
Chelsea, to me, are like Guy Fieri.
No.
They are. They're the Guy Fieri.
Guy Fieri's way down at the bottom. I don't know where Guy Fieri is.
He's like Leicester.
And again, like any American soccer fan, I only know the teams at the top.
Okay, good. We only concern ourselves.
So I'm saying Mourinho, definitely. Yeah, that's
McNally.
McNally. Like number two.
Who are Manchester United? Who would they be?
They'd be some smug, you know, midtown rat hole in sort of... in denial of their decline. I don't know. I don't know what it would be. I'd have to think about it.
To me, they're Tillman Fertitta, CEO of Landry's,
like,
Morton's, Rainforest Cafe.
You know, Manu is a steakhouse.
Manu is a steakhouse.
He's a Peter Luger's. It's a Morton's. It's a place that his reputation is much better than what it actually is.
Okay, good. I like it.
Go on.
All right.
Liverpool.
Now that would be Breslin's. That would be some Brit. No.
I had Elaine's down for them.
What are they? Elaine's?
Yeah.
Elaine's doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Good point. Liverpool's got history.
Well, when I talk about Liverpool for like baseball, they're the Red Sox.
Yeah.
Like they got that beautiful stadium. So maybe you'd have to say Liverpool. You have to look for a room. Let's give them Le Grand Oui.
Oh, Le Grand Oui. Classic
pink
New
flowers.
York. That's beautiful.
That's French for Elaine's.
Ancient. Been around for 100 years.
Yeah, like
Arsenal.
Maybe some pointy headed. You know, Michael's.
Michael's. Restaurant Michael's. In Midtown.
If I had Arsenal down as Paul Ledeen.
Yeah. I think we got it.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we pretty much got it. I don't know. Liverpool and Le Grand Oui is a little weird.
City. What else have we got? Oh, Man City.
Your own beloved.
That's got to be
flashy.
That could be Guy Fieri, actually.
Really?
No, right. City's got City. Money. It's got to be flashy. It's got to be expensive.
Have you seen those uniforms?
Yeah.
They're the worst taste.
Like Nobu.
Oh, God. Maybe.
What about Thomas
Keller? It's the best the money can buy.
No. Thomas Keller.
Thomas Keller.
680. He listens to the show.
No.
He's a great friend of $685 for tasting
money. This is the thing about Man City. Man City is patently bad taste, but actually, if you actually look at that club, it's very well run.
Who are Everton?
Everton or some, you know, striving, worthy New Jersey restaurant. Can't say that's not true.
Adam, I wish we had you on the phone now. I wish you'd not come in person.
Good.
I had him down as Wiley Dufresne.
What about him?
Everton. Innovating.
No.
Scrappy.
No, sorry.
Lowy. Yeah.
No,
why?
No.
Why?
Overly
why?
Cerebral, overthought. No. I mean, no. I love Wiley. I love all that.
School
but
of
that ain't Everton. That's
School
not Everton.
Of Science.
That's not
say.
Everton. That's not Everton.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of young men and women who listen to this pod, 18 to 34.
Yep.
And they want to know from you,
yep.
Adam Platt,
mm-hmm.
food critic,
sure.
New York Magazine.
Yeah.
When you go, when you're in the mood for a snack.
Snack. Yep.
Down the other end of the menu.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, where do you head? For the people of the food of the street, food of the people.
There are almost too many of those places to mention.
Which one do you frequent and say, that is the one?
Now, when I want a good fish taco,
yeah,
I go to this place on 12th Street called Baja Taco, which is right next to a Chipotle, but it is always much more crowded. Okay? Baja Taco for a fish taco. If you want soup, there's a very good place called Brodo on the Lower East Side. Out of the window, a restaurant called Hearth. Delicious broths and stuff. Steamy.
The wine.
Perfect
the
antidote wine to the polar vortex. Mm-hmm.
The wine list.
Wine list. Yeah, the Hearth. Yeah, a good one. They have a crazy sommelier.
Yeah,
good,
and they're very well. Some place football.
Sandwiches.
He's a Tottenham Hotspur fan.
Whoa.
But I need chains here.
Chains.
We have seven listeners. Two of them do not live in New York City. So a place that the world can go to, that you look at.
Oh, I can't be seen associating with chains.
Do you, when you travel outside, what are the cities in America that you go to that you think, wow, they have great food?
Proper Man City fan.
Not a lot.
Do you leave New York City?
No. This is the thing. New York City has more variety than anything. But these days, because of what you read about the sort of the explosion, the obliteration of the old fancy restaurant model, and the fact that the sort of kitchen slave revolution it's really spread all over the country, and you can get fabulous food virtually anywhere. Really, it's wonderful. Like, I was in Portland, Maine the other day. Portland, Maine, full.
Duck fat.
Holy Christ. Have you been to Duck Fat?
No, never been
to
Duck Fat.
Oh, my God. Duck Fat. They ought to open 17 Duck Fats in this town.
Well, I was the other day. I was in Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
The Salt Lick Barbecue at the Austin Airport.
I bet.
At the airport. I bet. Is better than any airport food I've ever eaten anywhere.
Also in Chicago. Mexican sandwiches in the Chicago airport called tortas.
Yeah.
The best in the country.
Last question for me. At Junk Drawer 15, what is Adam Platt going to eat to console himself when Roma beats City in the Champions League on Wednesday?
And you know that's going to happen. You know that's in the post, as they say.
In the post.
What I'm going to eat is...
What's your comfort food, Adam?
You know, I got a lot of different kinds of comfort foods. I'll probably waddle down. I live on 12th Street. I'll waddle down. I might look at that taco joint. Mm-hmm. And then I'll probably go into this wonderful sandwich shop called Nung Pang right next to it. You guys have been to Nung Pang, right?
I've never been
sort
to
Nung Pang. Sort of this pseudo-Cambodian. All the sandwiches taste the same, but all in the same delicious way.
Uh-huh.
I'll probably buy three or four of them, line them up on my table, and just say benediction.
You can just say to the owner, you can say, give me the Yaya Toure.
Yeah.
Where are your, like, when people come from out of town, people come there, what are your go-to New York restaurants? A lot of our listeners, you know, many of them haven't been to New York City. Some of them come here, they make a pilgrimage.
If you want a fancy meal, like the great sort of fancy, you know, four or five-star experience, is probably Le Bernardin Midtown. That's a great chef, Eric Repair, who actually happens to be in his kitchen, unlike other great chefs.
Yeah.
No, they're not that good.
Paul Dean.
Arsenal's not that good.
Okay.
Then I think Raoul's is a great choice.
Yeah.
If you want sort of a place to go, you know, for a chef chefs are sort of like athletes. They have like 8 years of their prime, and then they do other things.
Unless they're called Stephen Naismith.
That's probably 11 Madison. Daniel Holm is a great chef, although he keeps doing other things, but he is a great chef. And so for a proper old-fashioned feast, I mean, there's so many categories, but for a proper we have a wonderful pizza place, and also on 12th Street, called Piola. Well, they may have changed the name. It's where all the Napoli fans go.
Wow.
And you're walking down on a summer afternoon, and you hear this scream like a riot just broke out.
Yeah.
Napoli has scored a goal.
Wow.
And it's... The room is nothing to look at. It was one of the great places to watch the World Cup. The owner comes from Napoli, and the pizza there is like, you taste it, and you're like, oh, wait a minute. This is fabulous. Now, I'd say the essential New York restaurant, I mean, Katz is really sort of the essential New York restaurant. Mm-hmm. Katz's Deli. And you'd have to pick a steakhouse also.
You know, what steakhouse, quickly?
Sparks in Manhattan because of the sort of gangster.
You know what we're going to do? We're going to put on the website, on meninblazers.com, we're going to put down all of these restaurants that we've spoken about today.
You're going to have to pay for that information.
We are going to hear your responses, listeners, on who, if Manchester City were a restaurateur, which restaurateur would they be? And we will reveal the answer.
They're going to say Guy Fieri. They're going to say that. And I'm going to dispute it.
Adam, thank you so much. Your right, annual guys. New York Magazine Where to Eat Guide, Where to Eat in 2015. That's next year.
Here it comes.
It was just premiered.
Here it comes.
Over the past 5 minutes.
It's coming out at the end of December. You can pick up New York Magazine at your local newsstand. Thanks so much, Adam.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
What a bloke.
Oh, amazing, Rog.
After we got up, he turned around and he said he wants to open a patsy store with me.
Yeah, I think he meant pasty.
I'd do anything with that man.
You would do either.
He's a winner.
Okay, Ravens, Rog. Our first Raven comes from Tyler McPherson of Colorado. Tyler writes, "We are a few short months away from the World Cup." I believe this is the correct use of the term. "And I'm worried we have been drawn into the group of death. All I know about women's soccer is the names of several of the US players and that Sepp Blatter is very sexist. Should I be worried? And what are the keys to success for the United States?" We should say in the draw in Ottawa, Rog, the US women drawn into a very, very tough group.
Group of death.
Yeah.
Everyone says it's a brutal group, say USA Today.
Yeah.
Fifth-ranked Sweden, who conceded just one goal in 10 qualifying matches.
Oh, so Swedish.
10th-ranked Australia. Mm-hmm. And the champions of Africa, Nigeria. Mm-hmm. I guess that means we'll only win those first round games 12-0,
yeah.
8-0,
yeah.
And 6-1.
Yeah.
178 days away from kickoff, Davo.
Yeah.
I predict Group D will stand for dominate. We've got Hope Solo. If you can put aside any moral qualms whatsoever and have cognitive dissonance, you've got a great back line who can also score goals. Mm-hmm. We adore Heather O'Reilly.
Yeah.
We adore Megan Rapinoe, two of our favourite footballers of any kind.
Yeah.
And I honestly believe Sidney Leroux is going to have a breakout kind of into the public consciousness World Cup. And Alex Morgan is going to cross over into pop culture. The only thing they need, Dave, is a better nickname.
Yeah.
We've got a couple of months, really, to come up with one.
Yeah.
I think the best one we had thus far was Becker Women.
Yeah, that's very good. The Becker Women.
I think we can do better.
Yeah, I think we can. Okay, the winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers, poet, philosopher, soccer, scribe, Raven of the Week is Max Milbury. Max writes, "Hi, fellas. I'm a longtime avid fan of the pod and have listened weekly for the last couple of years. I've never sent you an email before, but today I needed to reach out and give you my thanks after listening to your pod last week. My grandma just recently turned 88 years old, all good for her, and while still mostly as sharp as ever, she tends to ramble on incessantly, especially when she's round her favourite grandsons. I would say her words to meaningful words ratio approaches something like 500 to 1. So when my mom asked me to pick grandma up and bring her to our Thanksgiving dinner, I said an enthusiastic, of course, followed by an ugh, once out of earshot. True to form, the second I arrived at Grandma's apartment and helped her out to the car, I was buffeted with whirlwind stories from the 1950s, vicious complaints about the life choices of my cousins, and of course, questions about why I, at 25, was not married yet. After a tortuous half hour, my brother and I had had enough, and we decided to throw on the pre-Thanksgiving Men in Blazers pod to drown her out. We cranked up the volume and proceeded to listen to 15 minutes of your discussion on telephonic sandwich eating, cremation, and popular English funeral hymns. For 15 minutes, maybe the first 15 minutes ever, my grandma did not utter a single word. I wasn't sure if she could understand anything you were saying, and I knew for a fact that she'd never watched a Premier League game in her life. But Betty Davis and Joan Crawford references had compelled my grandma to silence. Finally, she said, 'Who are these gentlemen on the radio? They're fantastic. I wanted to congratulate you on being the first two men in 88 years who were able to make my grandma stop talking. Also, just so you know, you've now got a new supporter who fits firmly into the always desirable 80 to 90-year-old female demographic. Courage, Max.'" Max, thanks so much. Please say hi to your grandma for us.
Play her this. We love you, grandma. I just say, one thing I realise about the people I choose to actually have as very, very good mate.
Yeah.
Is that they were always very close to their grandparents.
Oh, wow, that's interesting. All of my grandparents died before I was born, Rog. It's not my fault. I would have been close to them.
I also try and get my kids to be around my grandparents, both their sets of grandparents. I think it's the most important task.
Yeah, you're right.
Of grandparent is memory making.
Very true.
So it's very, we're very lucky that you will have this memory forever, Max.
Yeah, very, very true. Okay, your weekend looks like this. Arsenal versus Newcastle. That's the 12:30 game on Saturday. Manchester United versus Liverpool.
Not in the face.
8:30 a.m. on Sunday, and then Swansea versus Spurs. Who's going to wear the white shirts, Rog? That's 11 a.m. on Sunday. All games, you could sing. All games are on the NBC family of networks. There are many ways to connect to us. One is our Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon for items, big or small, just click off the Emporium page and Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the cost of creating the show. What are you putting in the store this weekend, Rog?
A book, Magnifico. Yeah. The Age of Innocent.
Yes.
Football in the 1970s, edited by Rule Golden. It's a Tashin book, Davey. It's a monster.
Yeah.
It's a 40-book hardcover. But with the holidays approaching, I thought I'd mention it. And we'll put some photos up on meninblazers.com. It's a full-colour beauty. If you're a long-term fan of football who wants a roller coaster nostalgic return to the innocence of the 1970s, or a newer fan who wants to understand how much the game has changed since then, it is here in full colour. Tight shorts, hair, girls, hooligans, Pelé's penis also makes an appearance. It's a slice of magic. It is one of my favourite books of the year and definitely worth a holiday splurge.
Yeah, Roger, I'm putting in The Monocle Guide to Business. I'm trying to run Embassy Row and with you run Men in Blazers more efficiently. Picked up this book last week. Fantastic business book. A very unconventional business book written by the guys at Monocle, the company run by FT columnist Tyler Brulé. It's a fantastic book. Lots of other ways to connect to us. meninblazers.wikispaces.com/. That's a wonder of the modern world, Rog. You can also connect to us through meninblazers.com. Sign up for our newsletter there, Rog. Follow us on Twitter at Embassy Davis, at Rog Bennett, at Men in Blazers, at Instagram at Men in Blazers. We've got a Facebook. We've also got a subreddit that's maintained by GFOP, Akshay. That's reddit.com/r/meninblazers. You can email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. You can send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. Vendorpunk Rog.
What a pig.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Prince Harry's wife.
How dare you?
Explosion!
Courage.
So is the day.
Is that your analysis?
To tweed.
Abrigado. Rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fight in America.
Love you, Rog.
Love you, Davo.